Municipal Utility Meeting to order, today being Monday, March 25th, 11:45 a.m. Mr. Scott, do we have you on the line with us today?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Does anybody have any changes for the agenda? If not, I'd look for a resolution for approval of the consent agenda.
Yes, so moved.
Second.
Resolution and a second. Any discussion or questions on the bill payments or the minutes from the last meeting? Mr. Herring, anything to point out on the bills this month or this time? It looks pretty straightforward.
Commissioner Mattern, not at this time unless there's questions. The bills do not consist of any capital projects, so there's no highlighting of any of the individual bills on there, and the bills that are there fairly routine in nature. So.
Sounds good. Doesn't look like we have any questions. So Beth, if you could take roll.
Certainly. Commissioner McDonald?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Magoo?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
That carries. Thank you. Moving along, item number three on the agenda, we have our audit report, the annual financial update, and CDS Conway Duth and Schmeising provides that, and this year we have Mr. Justin McGraw. So welcome, and we look forward to your presentation.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to come speak to you all and let you know how our audit process went and what we found going through that. So I have a presentation here. It's up on the screen. I think maybe some had on your tablets. The presentation is kind of a summation of our full audit report. So if you have any question about some of the information we're presenting on the presentation, you want a little more detail, there is some more detail in your full audit report, your financial statements. So here's a table of contents. This is a rundown of the presentation I'm going to give today. So I'll just start jumping into it. And if you have any questions, you know, please feel free to stop me or speak up, and we can try to answer them then. The first part of our report is our independent auditor's report. So this is kind of a letter from us as auditors to you as the commission. It outlines responsibilities of both parties, us as the auditors and you as the commission and your management team. Describes the intent of our audit, which is to determine if the statements are free from material misstatement and the auditing standards followed to come to that conclusion. The big takeaway here is that in our opinion, the statements are free of material misstatement and can be relied upon for decision-making purposes. Another part of your statements is the management discussion and analysis. So this is more of a narrative format. It gives your management team an opportunity to kind of explain how the year went, some of the changes that you may be seeing in the numbers in the financial statements. A few items to touch on here. Looking at your operating margins for 2018, you know, they were sufficient to cover the debt payments of the commission, as well as continue to make capital improvements in the current year, as well as prepare for future years for improvements you have planned. Another item that's in there is probably new this year, you may have seen before, is the benchmarking standards for the American Public Power Association, looking at how WMU compares to peers in the region and some of the things that, some of the ratios and metrics they use to measure performance. So one of those ratios is the operating ratio, which kind of discussed before, your operating margins. You'll see that WMU is kind of above its peers in performance in that metric, which, you know, again, will help you cover any current debt payments, maybe future debt payments that you may need to make, as well as continued capital improvements. Moving on to the numbers, so this is kind of the heart of the presentation here. The statement of net position, this is basically the commission's balance sheet. So you'll see current assets, these are things like cash, receivables, prepaid items. You'll see there was a rise in the current year of your current assets. A lot of that is due to cash. You see the cash increased as the operations, the revenue you're bringing in from operations outpaces the expenditures that you guys are seeing. Looking at non-current assets, these would be things like the buildings, infrastructure, items of that nature. You'll see that increased also in 2018. A lot of that was caused by upgrades and improvements made throughout the commission, some of the bigger ones being the pre-amp substation and some generation upgrades. So as those projects are being completed or being undertaken, some of that cash that's in a current item turns into a non-current item like a physical asset. Looking at the liability side of your balance sheet, you see that there's an increase in accounts payable. So these are bills that come in throughout the year. A lot of that is due to just accrued expenses related to that premium substation project. So that's a big chunk of your increase in accounts payable. So as of year end, those expenses were incurred, then they were paid shortly after December 31st. Looking at your overall long-term liabilities, there was a decrease in the current year. Part of that is due to continued payment of debt. However, we did implement a new accounting standard in 2018 that maybe was different in 2017. That's related to other post-employment benefits. I think primarily it's healthcare here at WMU. So we kind of changed, or the Government Accounting Standards Board changed how those liabilities, benefits should be accounted for. It's more of a long-term view now, so there was an increase due to that change in accounting standard for that liability. And then looking at your net position, so this would be if you paid off all your debts and all your outstanding bills and cashed out all your investments and sold all your infrastructure, all your assets, this is kind of what's left over. You'll see here, net investments and capital assets, this would be all your infrastructure, your building, equipment, less any debt owed on those items. You'll see that increased in 2018. A lot of that is due to continued improvements, upgrades being made, as well as continued payment of your debt obligations. But looking at overall net position for the commission, you see there was an increase in 2018, and that's kind of followed that trend that we've been seeing for the last several years as that net position continues to build up. So you can see here, here's a visual breakdown of your overall net position and kind of the different classifications that changed from 17 to 2018. Looking at operations, so this will be your statement of revenues and expenses. You know, the utility revenues experienced an increase in 2018, with the exception of the district heating. As that division continues to wind down, I'm assuming we'll see that those revenues drop again next year. And I think it's 2020, I believe, is when it's going to be discontinued. The electric division, electric division. You see, with the electric division, revenues experienced the greatest increase out of your three divisions. You can kind of see here, looking at the kilowatt hours purchased versus what was sold, it's kind of been, at least this year, in 17 and 18, that correlation between what you guys paid for power and what you ended up selling for power is relatively stable. So I believe, looking at the Energy Information Administration, they say the average 4 to 5% is line loss. So I think you guys are right in that same kind of area of versus what you're sending out versus what people are actually receiving and using for power. Looking at the electric revenue versus the cost of power, this kind of shows the cost of the power purchased versus what the commission was able to sell to customers. So that gap between purchased power and revenue is then kind of used to cover all the electric division's other operating costs. So wages and supplies and things, repairs, maintenance, things like that. So that's really your operating margin there to cover your day-to-day expenses. Looking at your net income of just the electric division over the last 5 years, kind of gives you a good visual of some of the trends you're seeing in just the overall net income. So once you've collected all your charge for services and paid all your expenses, here's kind of how the electric division is performing. Moving on to the water division. All right, so here is a 5-year trend of the overall cubic feet pumped versus sold. This one's relatively stable. You can see that margin that you guys have between what you're pumping versus what's going through people's meters has been relatively the same over the last 5 years. I think the experienced water loss, I think it's like 13 to 20% for this 5-year period, and according to the EPA, it's like 16 is average. So you guys are kind of on both sides of the average, but not too far off, and not deviating too far from what other utility commissions are experiencing. Now looking at your revenue versus the cost of production. So you've been able to maintain that profit margin that's needed to cover the cost of the division while continuing to build those reserves for potential and planned capital improvements in the future. So I think this is a good margin to try to maintain and prepare for those projects that you have planned coming up in the next 5-10 years. You'll see here, this is just another 5-year trend of your overall net income. You'll see there's a slight increase in 2018 versus 2017. However, that increase was less than the prior year. A lot of that was due to repair and maintenance for mains that were done in 2018. So that kind of ate into your net income a little bit in the water division. And then moving on to the heating division, you'll see here as the heating division is slowly being wound down, there's a decrease in both pounds of steam produced as well as the kilowatts sold. I think a lot of that is from speaking with the management teams, customers find other means of heating. There's less demand there. You see the same trend with the revenue versus the total costs. As that need for generation decreases, the costs decrease and the revenue decreases as well. Looking at the net income, you'll see here net income of the heating division and that 5-year trend, it is continuing to go up, which is good. However, those costs associated with the heating division, they're decreasing at a higher rate than the revenues are right now. So that's why you're seeing your net income grow, even though you're actually selling less steam, if you will. So as part of our audit, aside from looking at the numbers and balances and all the reports that we bug Denise and John for, we also look at compliance. So the commission's compliance with state laws and agreements and anything else that they're a part of. So we're happy to report that there were no legal compliance findings. Those would be things like contracts and bidding and public purpose, things like that. So we want to say thank you to your team for making it easier on us as we test these things. If you're doing things the right way, it makes it a lot easier on the auditors to not have to try to figure out what's going on. As far as internal control, so there's two internal control findings. I think you've seen them in the past related to auditor-prepared financial statements and limited segregation of duties. So with the auditor-prepared statements, that's basically us letting the commission know that while the information we used to prepare the statements derived from your financial records, we did put it in this format that you're seeing in front of you. So I just want to make sure that you understand that this is a product that we put together based on your information. With the limited segregation of duties, this is a comment or a finding that we see in a lot of organizations of a similar size with limited office staff. It frequently falls on a few or a small amount of team members to perform all the steps of the financial transaction recording process. So with that, as a commission, you have to kind of weigh that cost benefit of increasing the amount of staff and those expenses that come with that, with the benefit of making sure you're segregating out all those steps in the financial transaction process. We don't typically recommend that organizations increase their staff, 2-3-fold to split up all these different duties. It's just so you're aware. What we're seeing through our testing are some potential vulnerabilities with one person maybe having access to recording the transaction versus custody of the assets versus the authorization to record that transaction. So, even though we do have this comment in there, so you're aware of what we're finding, we do know or have seen that the commission is utilizing a pretty thorough review process so that there's always a hopefully a second set of eyes looking at different steps throughout the financial transaction recording process. Required communication. So we issue a management letter to the commission to let you know how the audit went, the overall audit process from planning to the field work now to me coming here and speaking with you. You know, we're happy to note that there was no real difficulties encountered dealing with your staff on the audit. Your management team was very helpful in providing the information we requested and things like that. And also as part of audit, we'd like to give you a recommendation for anything that we see maybe may help with your financial recording process and overall operations in general. So we do have one general recommendation, and that's the allowance for doubtful accounts. So you may have noticed a comment in our management letter explaining the allowance. You know, the purpose of that allowance is to try to estimate for all your items that have been billed, but what is the probability of collection? And you know, I'm sure you have seen it, or your staff's probably seen it, that the longer a bill goes unpaid, the less chance that it's going to be paid in full. So what we recommended is that the commission take those allowance for doubtful accounts and separate them from your accounts receivable balances. So if you have old or distressed accounts receivable balances, record those separately from that allowance that we're estimating is uncollectible, maybe to help better track the collectibility of those old accounts, you know? So really it's more of an accounting recommendation than maybe an operations recommendation, but that would help, we feel, track those. Here's our old items, here's what we think we can collect on them. So other than that, I don't really have anything else to add. Here's my contact information. At this time, if anybody has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. Or if you're in your free time looking through these reports and you said, I wish I would have asked Justin this, here's my information, feel free to shoot me an email, give me a call, or if you're ever in Litchfield, stop by the office. I'm usually in the rest of the year after May. So, I'll open up to any questions anybody has.
Justin, thank you for being here today and your presentation. Commissioners, do you have any immediate questions for Justin right now? Mr. Heron, can I have you address just a little bit more? Justin mentioned the allowance for doubtful accounts and kind of a recommendation there. And speaking with you, it looks like we do maybe have some options in what we can do for that. Could I have you address that for us a little bit further?
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Mattern. And if you don't mind, I'll yield that question to Denise. But yes, we've talked about what we can do here, and Denise has some ideas and suggestions that I'll let her share with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Historically, having come from other electric utilities, that was kind of how it was approached many, many years ago, where you'd write those old balances that were uncollectible off to basically an uncollectible receivable account so that you could still monitor how many you have left or who still owes you money. But as far as the allowance account, they would lump it all into the same one. I don't really know the true reason. My guess is that was either an accounting practice or standard many, many years ago when these companies were started, and or it had to do with how the software was set up. I've seen more recently, especially now with our new software, where it can distinguish and track all of these things, where it's being separated. And so that was something that's been kind of on our radar to look at separating. Our challenge is how much of that is truly of the receivable and how much of that is truly the allowance. Creating two separate GL accounts is easy in and of itself. It's just feeling relatively confident that we have the correct dollar amounts. And so John and I have talked about it, but I do feel comfortable with the plan we have in place. I think we're going to start on that receivable side, review those accounts again, make sure we're comfortable with the list of people that we feel still owe us money is accurate, and do an entry from there to get it separated into two, and going forward it will be very easy to manage from that point on.
Thank you, Denise. Is that something you're looking for quarter two of this year to get implemented then? Or?
Yeah, probably sooner than later. We have a couple of our customer service staff that will be retiring in the next couple of months, and I would really like to enlist their help on that project simply because they remember a lot of the things that have gone on around here and remember a lot of these people. So it probably will happen in second quarter of this year.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions from the commission at all?
I'd be interested in hearing, but I think there was two other, I don't know if there were deficiencies or whatever, but I'd be interested in hearing thoughts on how we can correct or...
The additional findings in the report there at the end?
I don't know if you could go back to that.
Yep, this one right here talking, yep.
Commissioner McDonald, thank you for the question. You're referring to the two material weaknesses noted? Okay. Lack of segregation of duties, as Justin referred to as a small office, it's difficult to separate that to the extent that you meet the audit requirements for separation of duties. But we do have separation of duties to the extent that we can't. You know, as an example, on the accounts payable side, you know, Gwynn processes the accounts payable, but actually they're reviewed by Denise and myself, both of that listing of what's coming in and going out before they, you know, are processed, and that's a listing that the commission sees as well. You know, payroll is kind of the same. Gwynn processes payroll, Denise reviews payroll before stuff is processed. Utility billing on that side of it, what comes in, what goes out. There's probably a couple more steps. Denise probably can expand on that better than I can, but there too, we have one individual that processes utility bills, then we have our staff that collects it, and then the deposits again are handled by a couple different people. So there's a number of checks and balances through that process or separation of duties. So does that answer your question there?
So do we plan to take any additional steps to correct these, or are we just good with them continuing to show up, I suppose, here? Like next year, I assume, if we don't do anything, we
can't. I don't know if we have a large enough staff to separate those duties to remove them from our audit. That might be a question for Justin.
Is there any other steps, Justin, that you can take, like unalterable audit trails, or what else recommendations you have to combat this?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to break out some of those processes in a small office. I know some clients have considered outsourcing some certain portions of their financial recording process. A lot of our maybe smaller staff size clients, you know, just understand that this is an issue with having a few number of people being able to do certain items, and they kind of rely on people like yourself, the commission at the governance level, to be that second set of eyes, just being aware that there are maybe one individual or there's one individual that can record a transaction and authorize release of funds and has custody of those funds, you know. Like I said, it's a cost benefit to the organization. Is it worth hiring another two or three people to break these things up? Or is it just better to be cognizant of the fact and try to have new processes in place so that even though an individual like Denise who can record a transaction and go in and make an adjustment to that transaction, those adjustments maybe are being reviewed by a John or maybe even yourself if you feel so inclined. As far as the financial statements, prepared financial statements, you know, that's again a cost benefit thing. If you feel it's worth Denise's time to try to put this together, and I don't want to throw any more work on Denise's plate, that's something that could be considered. Otherwise, it's more of a disclosure of us to you saying this is something, a product we put together that really comes from your information, but it's our product. So there's ways to kind of combat these findings or these weaknesses. It's just a matter of is it worth the price that goes into it.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for the question on that, Commissioner McDonald. I think to expand on that just a little bit further, you know, the auditor prepared financial statements, I suppose that there's a weakness and a strength there, and the strength being that does put another set of eyes, an outside set of eyes on our finances here to kind of help hold us accountable for that. So,
correct, yeah.
I see that as being helpful as well. I think, you know, it's of course incumbent upon us as a commission to just be diligent as we're looking through the financials every time as well to make sure that we are taking a look at them and not just perusing through them too quickly and dismissing things that we might have questions on. So we do have that responsibility.
Commissioner Manner, Commissioner McDonald, to expand a little bit more on the lack of segregation of duties. There's probably another important step that I missed as I was going through the steps on the accounts payable from staff. When an invoice comes in here, those invoices are routed to the department head that incurred those expenses. And that department then provides a description, provides the account number, and approves or okays that dollar amount that's on that invoice. From there, then it goes to Gwen and through the process. So that's an important piece there, too, as far as checks and balances to make sure that the dollars that we have are accounted for without any type of misuse of funds or embezzlement of funds.
That's helpful. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, Justin, thank you for the report. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, staying within that topic, Ms. Runge, we'll have you give us our financial updates.
Commissioner Madden, we should have a resolution.
Oh, yes, sorry.
A motion to approve the audit and the management report.
My apologies. I do need a motion for approval on the update.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that carries. Thank you. All right, Ms. Runge, go ahead.
All right, thank you. We'll start with the electric division. Looking in the yellow on the top with revenue, you will see we're $598,173 ahead of last year at this time. The majority of that is what I touched on last month with the January revenue, that we have extra revenue moving there from our bill cycle change. We also aligned our revenue months with the calendar month, and so there was one extra bill cycle of revenue in there, which accounts for the majority of that. Going down to the operating expenses in the orange, we're a little over $500,000 below last year. The majority of that is coming from our power costs. Last year, we were at about $2.7 million total power costs. This year, we're at about $2.2 year to date. Looking at the green on the bottom, we are $1,174,925 ahead of last year at this point in the year on our margins for the electric division. Moving on to the water division in the yellow for our revenue. Again, we are $89,916 ahead of last year. There's about $20,000 of that is attributable to our rate increase that went into effect. The other $69,000, again, is due to that bill cycle change where we have one extra cycle in there in January. In the orange, our expenses are up a little under $12,000. Nothing large there standing out, just a little, a couple thousand here and there in each line item, kind of adds up to that $12,000. In the green on the bottom for our margins, we are $83,757 ahead of last year at this point in the year. The heating division, the revenue in the yellow, we're $76,000 below last year. Again, there's additional revenue in there from our bill cycle change of about $29,000, so we're actually a little over $100,000 behind last year at this point in the year. That's attributable to our customers that are gradually moving off our system in anticipation of us shutting it down January 1st of next year. In the orange, our expenses, we are about $19,000 below last year. Again, we're not making investments into the system. We've also rented the packaged boiler, so we're able to control what we're generating to provide to the district heat. Margins overall, we're $53,000 below last year at this point in the year, and taking into account the extra revenue, we're actually a little under $83,000 behind last year at this point in the year. Looking at the final statement, which is all divisions combined, again in the revenue, about $600,000 ahead of last year, attributable to that additional revenue that we have in there. In the orange, we're $510,000 below last year in expenses, and overall margins were $1.2 million ahead of last year at this point in the year. Taking off the additional revenue due to our bill cycle change, we're actually about $520,000 ahead of last year at this point in the year. Are there any questions on any of the financial statements? Moving on, we'll take a look at our investment portfolio. Again, our year-to-date yield is 0.45%. Our bar cap year-to-date yield is 0.36, and so we are ahead of our policy on our investments. On the CapEx transmission project, we have received no additional contributions from that, and so it remains the same as last month, our net investment, $246,109.81. Any questions on the investments or the financials?
Not seeing any.
If we're then ready, we can take a look at our fund allocations for 2019. And those are under the fund allocations tab. The lines highlighted in yellow are the funds that we are proposing to make changes to. I can run through those real quickly. The customer deposit fund, we are carrying some additional. Do you have a question? We are carrying some additional deposit balances over what we have in the past, and so we feel we need to increase that by $100,000 to cover the amount of consumer deposits that we're holding. Expansion Reserve Fund, we're proposing to add $1 million to that fund. That is for our office building. Catastrophic Reserve Fund, we're proposing to increase that by $1 million. That is basically our self-insurance on a lot of our capital assets that we have. And with our Priam substation being put into service in 2019, we're recommending that we increase that by $1 million. Water Treatment Plant Reserve Fund, that is to go towards the new water treatment plant. We're recommending increasing that by $822,000, which was the water fund margins from 2018. Transmission Construction Fund, we are recommending to decrease that from $5 million to $1.5 million, and reason being the remaining balance of our Priam substation construction is approximately $1.5 million. The rest of it's been paid out. And the Power Plant Reserve Fund, we're recommending to establish that fund and add $1 million to that particular fund.
Any questions?
Commissioner Mattern, I'd like to expand on probably two of those items.
Please do.
Item number seven, our catastrophic reserve fund, as Denise alluded to, Pram substation's coming online, so therefore we're looking at that. But also as a reminder to the commission that we are self-insured here with our distribution system. Buying coverage or insurance for that is very expensive. We've looked at that, a number of years back, 3-4 years back, and we elected to retain our self-insured status. So if our 69 loop around town, or we have a number of feeders that are overhead yet, if they were to go down, $3-4 million would be consumed in very quickly if we had that type of event go on. So we need those dollars there. And as we go forward, we might have to increase those numbers, maybe another $1 million over time, just simply because of the cost of rebuilding that infrastructure if it were to go down on us. And the Power Plant Reserve Fund, to give the commission a little bit of background on what it would cost us to address cleanup over at the power plant when the day comes. All the consultants that we reach out to, they're all telling us we can look at somewhere around $4 million. So we figure over the next 4 years we can do, somewhere around $1 million per year. We'd have the funds set aside to clean up at the power plant when and if the decision's made to decommission the plant. So we figured we'd start with $1 million for now and see how things come together over the next 2-3 years and increase those dollars appropriately as we go forward.
Thank you. Any other questions on this report?
I have a quick question. Are you looking at setting aside those funds at this time or by the end of the year?
This is allocating our reserves or dollars that we have right now. So as of 3/1/2019, if the commission approves the allocation of these dollar amounts, they would be designated as such after this meeting today.
And I'll just clarify that, Ross. This is actually our investment balance as of December 31st, 2018. That's typically what we do is look at the prior year's balance and make those allocations in March once the audit is complete so that those balances are confirmed. And then it'll stay that allocation until next year again.
I have one more question on number six, the expansion reserve fund. That's the building fund, or is that something different?
Correct. That's the office building.
It seems to me, if I'm recalling correctly, I thought we had started that a couple years ago at about $1 million a year. Are we missing something out of there? I thought we were already over the $2 million mark on that one.
No. As of last year, what was allocated was $1,050,000, and it's been the goal of the commission to have at least 25% put away before we move forward. And on the priority listing of our large capital projects that we have going on, the building was designated as the lowest of that priority listing.
So the $1,050,000 that's there, was that done last year, or was that 2 years ago?
I believe it was last year, a combination. It was maybe started at $500,000, and then we added another $550,000 last year.
I believe Denise is correct. This is the third year we're allocating money to our building project.
I thought it was the third year, and I thought we were doing $1 million a year. But okay. All right. We'll need a motion for approval on the fund balance allocation.
So moved.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any final discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And that carries. Thank you, Denise. All right, item number five, Polar Vortex Recap. Ms. Carlson.
Thank you. Would you please go to the timeline and related data? We'll go to the financial impact at the end. I did make some printouts, so it's a little easier for the commissioners. So the timeline of events is just a brief outline of everything that happened those 3 days, 29th, 30th, and 31st for the polar vortex. One thing for sure I have to say is that we had some excellent teamwork involving five departments, and John was actually gone. MMUA.
Yeah, primary conference.
Yeah, so although he was on the phone with us on the meeting and so forth, so it was very good teamwork. We all put our heads together. So you can see there on the 29th, we kept pretty busy in the morning. And then in the afternoon, the wind turbines shut down, and the next day we had LMR emergency, and but it turned out that we had no obligations, so we did not have to run any generation. Let's see. I guess I'll get into the rest of this later, but if you go to the next page, you can see the temperatures for those 3 days. So we have a high of -6 on Tuesday, the 29th, and a low of -27, a high of -18 on the 30th, with a low of -29, and then a high of 1 degree and a low of -29 those 3 days. So very unusual. I've got this on the screen here so that as I'm talking, you can look to see where the pointer is. So first of all, how to read this. Okay, this is the electrical load in this column here, and these are the three different days, 1, 2, 3, okay? The blue line on this graph, that is the forecasted load, and the red is the actual. So that little bit of difference there means that we were selling our excess energy. Same here, we were selling our excess energy. Same here, selling our excess energy. It's always good to over-forecast when the weather is uncertain. Around here is where MISO called their LMR emergency, and normally if we had megawatts available, we would have been running our generation for 4 hours and through here, these 4 hours. But we had no obligation to run because we'd had a gas curtailment. And the gas curtailment started here and it didn't end until 44 hours later. I think it was 44 hours. And so because of that, we were not able to run any more we were not able to burn any more gas because we were at our full capacity on gas consumption. Then over here, this is the real time and day ahead hourly prices. This day, it was almost normal pricing until we got here. Then things started to take off. And then the next day, the prices went crazy. Here was over $600 and $400. That was real time, but you can see our day ahead prices were very, they were lower. So, because we, I don't know what keeps happening here. Because we had this excess energy here, we were selling at these prices, $700. Well, it wasn't 700, but it was close to $700. And the average real-time LMP over these 3 days was 66.76, and the average day-ahead LMP was 65.23. Now, normal prices for January were 29.60 and 29.67, so over double the price.
Can you tell us why did the price like take a free fall? Why did it spike and then drop?
Okay, so I gave you a few news articles. There were a lot of units that were unable to generate. They were supposed to. They had scheduled it, but because of the cold temperatures, their generators went down. Okay, so when generators go down, then they call on the next available generation, and they always go with the cheapest generation first. Now you have these generators that are the cheaper cost, but now they've failed. So now they have to start calling on units that are more expensive. For instance, our diesels cost $200 a megawatt to run. So, and there's also congestion involved in that. So the congestion of these hours were very exaggerated because there was an LMR emergency and there was a gas curtailment. And in the MISO region, there was even a gas explosion. There were, Xcel Energy was asking their customers to turn their heat down to 63, I think it was. And because of all these issues, that just drove the LMPs up, okay? So then you get over to the wind, and at this hour here on the 29th, that was when, if you look at your temperatures, it was minus 18 at hour ending 16. And that is when the equipment shut itself down to protect the wind turbines. And so there was no wind all this day, all the way to here until the temperatures reached minus 4 degrees, and then wind turbine 4 started up at hour ending 16, and wind turbine 3 started up at hour ending 17. Any questions on this page? Okay. So Then if you go back to the financial impact. So brief summary. So when there's a gas curtailment, we are supposed to stay under our capacity of 600 decatherms a day. Now, we couldn't just turn off our gas because we were providing heat to the district heating system. So for 44 hours, we were trying our hardest to keep our numbers under 600 decatherms. That's why we had these meetings. And so there was just incremental small amount of decatherms that we did go over. And the $1,191, that was basically the penalty amount, which in my opinion was pretty minimal, because we really didn't know what that penalty was going to be until we got the bill probably 6 weeks later. And MISO called the load modifying resources the LMR emergency. And so because our gas consumption was restricted to 600 decatherms a day, we knew that we would not be able to provide MISO with any megawatts. So we'd gone into the MISO communication system and changed all of our megawatts available to zero. And so when there was an LMR emergency, we actually had no obligation. Already talked about the wind turbines automatically shutting down due to ambient temperatures going below 20 degrees below, and came back up again 46 hours later. MISO prices were definitely elevated over the 3 days. However, the load forecast was more than the actual load, as I explained over here. So we were selling that excess energy, and just in the 3 hours, I believe it was like $6,000 that we received. Rather than us paying $6,000, we were receiving $6,000. Our budget for January, actually I should say it this way, that after all was said and done, we were under budget by $39,788. So I think that we were very fortunate. I think there were some utilities that were not so fortunate as us. So, any questions?
Yeah, I have one more question. Mm-hmm. How do we know that we run straight diesel number two? Do we know for sure that it's going to function at what temperature, or do we know?
Yes, Commissioner McDonald. Kevin had looked into what we had in it fuel. We thought we had number two in there, but when we looked into it, we had the biodiesel in there. Kevin purchased an additive that we put in the tanks there. I don't know, what would it take, Kevin, 2 days to get it? It was still very cold. We dumped that additive in, and that took care of the gelling problem that we had in it. So we know how to work with the biodiesel fuels as well as straight number two fuel. Straight number two fuel doesn't gel up, but we didn't have straight number two in there. We had that biodiesel number two in, so it created issues for us. But we're fairly confident that if we had straight number two in, that is, Kevin's watching it when he orders it to make sure we get straight number two, as we don't know when we're going to have these type of temperatures and we need to be prepared for it. So as we go forward, that's why we'll be in those tanks. And to maybe expand on your question, the earlier question, what causes those spikes, it's a combination of supply and demand, to put it in simple terms. The needs of energy were going up, and the ability to provide the generation was being distorted, was being degraded. As Chris said, gas supply was not available because there was pipeline breaks in a gas supply, and as the generators had to come on in order to encourage and entice people to bring those higher units on, like our diesel generators, they cost us $200 to run, but there's other generation higher than that. So as those units come on, that keeps pushing that price up. So it's a combination of supply and demand and availability of the type of generation that's going to meet that demand.
Yeah, thanks for that. I guess what I was most interested in is what cut, like at hour ending 11, you know, it's just like a straight drop off. What type of generation came online, or what caused the demand to drop so quickly that it decreased?
I can't answer that, but potentially what would have happened there is that the load dropped or other units came back on, less expensive units. Say they got gas supply back up and running, a gas line that was ruptured that they were repairing probably came back online, which allowed a gas unit generator to come online, and then MISO turned off the more expensive ones.
In fact, the LMR emergency was supposed to last for 4 hours, but that particular hour that you're talking about, that was when they canceled the emergency.
Mm-hmm. Quick question, in terms of forecasting, when we're forecasting ahead, for instance, next year, is it going to cost us any money if we forecast, you know, a higher number for the decatherm that we might not be able to use it, or?
Forecasting for gas, you mean?
What I'm saying is just like, for instance, here, you already have the forecast, right? The blue line, that's already...
The forecast is created the day before. That's called the day.
Oh, it's just always day
it's
before.
A day ahead forecast.
I
yeah.
see. So who determines that? If that's forecasting.
I use a forecasting tool.
Oh, you use forecasting?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So using that, so determining, can you, if you determine higher, would that gonna, or is it gonna be a limitation for you to do that in terms of if you wanted to forecast
no,
higher
I can,
number?
I can tweak the forecast. I can add a little bit more.
Would that be additional costs if you do that, or?
Yes, but then if you've over-forecast, then you're selling that energy back into the market again. So the price that you pay real-time could be a lot different than what the price you pay day ahead. And it can go both ways.
Okay.
It's a guess. Stock market.
Commissioner Mabu, further answer that. We don't have staff. We don't try and guess or play the markets. We with our forecasting tools, as Chris alluded to, we do our very best to try and hit our hourly needs very close to what the needs are. And actually, if you see the daily forecast, you're going to see, you know, if everyone takes the time to look, we can go through them with you. But the forecasting that we do is very close on an hourly basis.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
My goal is to just cover the load.
The load. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah.
Chris, thank you for the report. It looks like on January 30th, then we had 3 hours that we were selling into the market. Is that correct?
Yes.
And for a total of about 6,000, or was it about 6,000 per hour?
Oh no, a total of about 6,000. Yeah.
So in spite of our,
I have all the daily and the hourly information. If you're ever interested in just seeing it all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. So in spite of our penalty on gas usage, we actually netted a little under 5,000 for the event then. So that's a good thing. Good position to be in. All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right. Item number 6, we are to the General Manager's Report.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Mattern. The first item on there consists of the Missouri River approved membership and bylaw agreements that the Commission approved at our last meeting. They have been approved by Missouri River with no changes to them, so we can consider those completed. And then we had Labor Committee met to look at the strategic plan. We recessed that meeting, and we're picking that up on April 9th again. And under At the last meeting, I also asked if the commission wanted to consider pushing the rate study over to the Labor Committee, looking for some direction on that, and whether the commission as a whole would like to push that over to the Labor Committee. I believe the Labor Committee is willing to take it on if that's the wishes of the commission. Typically, that would be brought to the Planning Committee, but the Planning Committee has a pretty full plate, so we're looking at bringing it to the Labor Committee.
Are you looking for direction currently?
We're not moving forward with it yet. I mean, if the commission knows the approach they want to take to it, yeah, we'll take the directive. Otherwise, we'll bring it back up next meeting.
I'll defer to our Planning Committee Vice Chair.
Labor Committee, you can have.
We're comfortable pushing that over.
I will give my background to that before Commissioner Magnuson responds to that. I think it'd be beneficial for the Labor Committee to work with staff through our rate process. And the reason I say that, the Planning Committee works with all our budgets, with our capital improvement plans, and our cash flow statements. And the Labor Committee is not privy to the detail that gets talked about at that level and understanding our budgets and our rates that are associated with that. So I think with the Labor Committee, if they were to consider taking that on, I think that would give them a lot of insight into understanding the details of what really goes into our budgets, how the cash flow statements are put together, and how our rates play into that. So I think there would be a great deal of value in the Labor Committee being involved at that level, but that's just my pitch.
That's what I had.
Mr. Magnuson.
You know, I see both sides of it. I guess when you take a look at it from our side setting rates, if we're not setting on the other side of it too, we look at rates but not see the whole picture though too. So, if we recommend rates going one way or another, and it's kind of then telling your committee or the other committee to, this is what you've got to work with from the expense by expense side of it, not knowing the whole story.
Mr. Hearn, do you have concerns with that?
It's solely up to the commission. Like I said, typically we go to the Planning Committee, but the Planning Committee, when they had their governance workshop, talked about dividing up some of the workload more uniformly. This was one area where I felt that possibility could exist. Because rate study, the Planning Committee has not started with the rate study yet, where the Planning Committee is deep into the water treatment and a generation study analysis. So this is one area where I thought we could shift over if it's the wishes of the Commission. So
I think to your points that this would hopefully help fill in the Labor Committee on some other details, maybe, Mr. Magnuson, to address your concerns, that you would have more of that background information to be able to make a full recommendation. Of course, anytime we're talking about rates, it would come back to the full Commission for a fuller discussion, and perhaps at that point the Planning Committee folks could step in and maybe fill in some additional details as well. But my hope is that staff would really be able to get you guys caught up on some information if you were willing to take that one on.
And I think we can take it on. I think from a capacity standpoint, we would have the ability to, probably more than what you guys have going on right now. It's just understanding that there are two sides of that too. So it's probably might take staff a little more education for us on the big picture.
And I would agree with Commissioner Magnuson. We've talked about that at staff level already and said, it's probably going to take us to go back in and review a lot of the information that we cover at budget time. But I think it would be beneficial to do that, so the commission as a whole has a better understanding of our budgets, our cash flow statements, and then the rates required to support our capital improvement projects.
And it could work the other way too, where, you could take a look at the Planning Committee, you could take a look at what they need for revenue too, first before it comes to Labor Committee too, for the rate hikes or not.
I assume that would be part of the study, is that correct?
Actually, what we need for rate hikes is going to be driven by the budgets that were approved here the first of the year. So that work has been done. What we need for rate hikes based on what's been approved by our capital improvement projects has been completed, which is driving us to look at our rates. So
Big number. Just a little more education.
That's not a bad thing. I think as long as staff is aware and willing, of course, to do the education component, I think that would be key. I think everybody's aware that that would be necessary. So if you guys are willing to take that, I think the planning committee would be glad to let you have it.
We'll take it.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I think we have consensus there for you.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Commission. We will move that over to the planning or to the labor committee then, and we'll move forward with it as appropriate. Last thing I want to mention is actually under future events. We have a five-series seminar put together by APPA on governance. And with that said, last week, Friday, we have our first one. And Missouri River pushed us an email here this week. When they held a Municipal Power Leadership Academy last fall, last summer when it was, those commissioners and council members that attended that Leadership Academy strongly suggested to Missouri River that they promote these series of webinars. And so to do that, promote it because of the value for the commission council members to take part or to watch those. So they're offering a 50-50 cost share, cost split on those on the series, or individual if commissioners, council members only have time to watch an individual one. So with that said, I guess I would support that and echo Missouri River's request for consideration by the commission. I believe Beth has them set up already because Carol, Commissioner Lemire, and Commissioner Matter has signed up for them or have acknowledged that they would like to take them in. So they are signed up. So if any of the other commissioners have time, let us know. They're over noon. Beth will order in lunch if you want to watch it. The one that we had Friday was an hour and 15 minutes roughly. So you have a good hour into it. So anybody has time, let us know, let Beth know, and we'll have lunch here for you. Other than that, I would include, go ahead, Commissioner Magnuson.
Can those be taped and shared with us to watch at our leisure?
They don't like to. We even asked for the hard copy of it.
Okay.
And what they're going to push out, or what they told us, because at the end of the webinar on Friday, we asked if we could get the PowerPoints, and they said no, but they will send out the highlights of the PowerPoint, so we'll get a condensed version of them. So their preference is to receive their fees for those presentations. Oh. Good question, though.
The live events can be viewed at your remote location, though. I vouch for these webinars. I did see the one on Friday as well, that particular topic. They spent a lot of time on fiduciary responsibility of the commission and the governing board, and I think it tied in well to the audit today as well, that we certainly have responsibility in those areas. So I've seen some of these in the past, and I do vouch for their value. So I think it's a good thing to take into consideration.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Manner. That would conclude my report unless there's additional questions.
No other questions? Anything else to come before the commission today? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move. Second.
We have a motion and a second. We are adjourned. Thank you.
All right, thank you.